welcome to Coffee and Catastrophe. We're going to call this Season 2. We originally called it Volume 2, but now we're going to go with Season 2, Episode 3, Industry Insights, Baby Steps to Publishing.
Woohoo!
If you'd like to contact us, please contact us at catastrophiccoffee@gmail.com.
No hate mail, please.
Maybe a little. I get lonely sometimes.
I am D.A. Bale, author of the Bartender Babe Chronicles and the Deepest Darkness series. You can reach me at dabalepublishing.blogspot.com.
And I am William Brian Johnson, writer of Hell to Pay and a book coming soon, which keeps coming soon. If you want to contact me, you can check me out at fatherthunder.blogspot.com or at the ruminationofthunder.com website, where you can see my storm-chasing exploits.
I love your storm-chasing pictures.
I haven't done enough.
Well, it's coming up on another season.
I know, and I'm hoping we don't have drought, but that's another topic.
Yeah, we don't even want to get into the drought situation. One of the things that we wanted to address in this kind of industry insights series that we're doing this season is just to help out a lot of the new authors, or maybe some authors that have been out of the self-publishing industry for a while.
Why are you looking at me?
What?
It's been a while.
Yes, it has been a while.
I blew the dust off my Amazon page the other day and thought, wow, I really have...
Did you remember your login for it?
Okay, maybe I had to redo the login for it, but, you know...
I knew it!
I was even looking at my paper that I had done for my master's degree and thought, you know, maybe I ought to put it on here and see if anybody bites. I'm not going to, so, yeah.
No. Oh, come on, really?
I actually thought about maybe trying to publish it when I first, but that time has passed now.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm 2 years out and it feels
great.
You just
don't care about it anymore?
No, I read it for, I had a colleague approach me the other day about something and I went back and reread it and part of me was like, yeah, this is good. Part of me is like, just put this monster to bed and never look at it again.
Yeah, there you go.
Print it out, take it in the back, and burn it.
Maybe 20 years from now.
Sure.
Yeah, or your girls might enjoy reading it someday. And...
Oh, yeah, because it's riveting. It's, it's not a fun read.
Oh, well, fine. So Baby Steps to Publishing. Why are we doing this, Brian?
I ask myself that every day. Why am I doing this? Why am I here? Why do I keep whipping myself? And I love to talk about writing. I love to write. I took time today and I wrote, and that felt good.
Mm-hmm.
I write because I have stories in my head that'll keep kicking me in the back of my head unless I write them out.
Well, yeah, and you don't want your skull to be kicked or anything like that.
But unfortunately, my problem is I have too many stories.
I have the exact same problem.
I have several stories. I have the sequel to Hell to Pay. I have a kids series. Not my
own. Oh, gosh, that's scary, Brian. You writing a kids book?
Oh, well, I had an idea for it, though, that I would love if I had a good artist.
Ah, DeviantArt, that's a good place to go for artists.
That is a good place. Yeah. But I had
you're gonna be spending some money, though.
Story that I would love to do about kids researching scientists.
Oh!
And it's from the point of view of something
Well, coming from you, that sounds perfect.
Yeah, but it occurs to all these scientists, and it's something that I've thought about, and I've got a summer coming up that I'm going to have some time. I may research it, play with it, and maybe send it off and see if somebody's interested.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's, you know, and of course, Aristid is going to take my writing life, because it's so much I want to do, and it's blowing up so big, and I don't know, some days I look at it and go, what have I done? What is this doing?
Fantasy is still really popular now.
Yeah, and, you know, I look at horror, and horror is hard to sell.
Yeah.
It is very hard to sell, but I would love to do something with Hell to Pay, and I would love to do, there's actually another ghost story I would love to write.
See, I've actually had some bizarre kind of ghost story type ideas. I've had historical mystery story ideas, a series that I want to do there, that's some ghost story type ideas there, just some fantasy ideas that I'm just all over the place, you know, my space opera, my mysteries, my thrillers. It's just like, I have way too many ideas, just like you.
And I have a real crazy Doctor Who kind of takeoff. It's not a Doctor Who universe, but it's a story that I think would go well.
So not fanfic, huh?
Not fanfic. This is its own little universe with its own little quirks, but I think it would be a blast to write.
Well, and probably attract the Doctor Who people.
And truthfully, if some of these others take off, I may do this episodic.
That's a great idea, actually.
And, well, Kindle did something a while back to where they were doing episodic. I don't
think it didn't. Well. No, it ended up kind of.
You could buy subscriptions, and they'd have these little magazines come out. Yeah.
That was kind of the pre KU. For those who don't know, Kindle Unlimited, when I say KU, it's Kindle Unlimited. It's a subscription reading service that Amazon offers.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this was before that. What was it called? I can't remember what it was called.
I don't remember. I just remember it was Amazon's subscription service.
But yeah, and it was specifically episodic type.
It was kind of the stories. Thing you could pay a certain amount and get everything that came out. But mm-hmm. The weird thing was, you start thinking, wow, that's kind of taking a chance on an author and hoping
and
that you could
they
get,
may never get it finished.
Yes, they may do the like first novel and hey, this is great, but
you read a chapter at a time. They release a chapter every week or something like that. And yeah. Well, it reminded me, the concept of it reminded me of, you know, how they used to do in magazines and newspapers way back, you know, in the 1800s and stuff like that. They had these stories and they would publish a chapter or something at a time, a scene at a time in the newspaper or the magazine, and you were just riveted to it, just waiting for the next one to come out, and it pushed a lot of books, or it pushed a lot of newspaper sales, magazine sales, and stuff like that. So that's kind of the idea of it reminded me of that when it first
there's
approached.
I just lost it. There was a couple fantasy that used to be published, I think, in Omni that had a monthly, you know, the next thing.
An omnibus, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
yeah,
no, that's... I'm sorry, Omni Magazine.
Oh,
which was like one of the huge sci-fi pillars for
forever.
They would have little ones that would come out in the magazines, and I think even like the guy that wrote Tarzan and John, what was the movie? It wasn't a very
John good, Carter.
John Carter of Mars came out as episodic in certain magazines. Yeah, I would like to see that, especially in today's digital world, come back. I just don't know what form or function.
The only problem with that, and I think this is one of the problems that they had with this, when Amazon tried to do something like that, was that people's attention spans are so short nowadays that it's like, they read the section, oh, it's interesting, and then they sleep on it, and the next day they've forgotten all about it.
Yeah. And Patterson was going to do a series of books. Was the series The Zoo?
Like 100 pages each or something.
Yeah, it was kind of a beach read that you take for a weekend, finish it in that weekend, and you're done with it.
Heck, something like that I would finish in a couple of hours. I'd need to take the whole series with me if I went to the beach for a weekend. So basically, what we kind of wanted to do before we got off on our little tangent there, a lot of questions come out, and I know I mentioned K-boards a lot, but there are a lot of author threads out there, publishing threads out there, you know, message boards and stuff like that, that a lot of authors who are new to the industry are always asking questions. Instead of doing the hard work themselves and searching the site for threads about it, they just come out and are always asking questions about, well, what can I do? You know, I haven't published yet, but I'm getting ready to publish. I think I'm about ready to publish or something like that. Or I've been out of the game for a while, I have one book published, or I've written a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm not sure what, you know, the next steps are that I want to pursue. And so we kind of got this together, and that's one of the things that we wanted to kind of address in our Industry Insights series here, is just what are some basic steps that a new author can take, or an author who has been out of the game for a while, Brian, to get a manuscript ready to go, to get ready to jump into this world of indie self-publishing and stuff like that. So this is just going to kind of be a brief overview, a brief list of these, and then we're going to kind of take some of these more important ones and break them out into short, separate episodes in the podcast.
And I think one of the most important ones that you have there is write your book.
Yeah.
Because it's amazing, and a lot of the conventions I've been to and met with editors and agents, the big question is it finished? Is it done? Mm-hmm. Because I know sometimes I have a hard time finishing a book.
Oh, yeah.
Or just stop messing with it and say it's done. It's finally at that point where I'm releasing it into the wild. And it's amazing the amount of people that get things that aren't done. You know, they mm-hmm. ask for a partial or a full submission, and it's like, well, let me send you the chapters I have done. Yeah, not a professional thing to do.
Well, you know why they do that? Why they want to know if it's done? Because, what is it, 85% of people who actually start a book never finish it?
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was, of course, numbers before self-publishing became so big and so popular, but I would still say that's the same thing. I know many people who have never finished a book.
Right, and they say nonfiction's about the only thing that you can actually do a query on an idea mm-hmm. and send it out
yeah.
before writing it, to where fiction, you pretty much have to have it
ready to go. Yeah. Uh-huh. In some form or another, it's got to be finished. So yeah, I mean, writing your book, getting it completed, and making it the best you can make it.
Which goes right into our next point.
Really? Edit some more.
Polish that diamond until it gleams. Just don't polish it to the point that it disappears.
Well, and a lot of people talk about, well, do I need to pay for editing, you know, and stuff like that. I don't have a lot of money, whatever. You really need to look at what your strengths are. Are you just looking for a proofread? Are you looking for developmental edits and stuff like that? Which we'll get into that a little bit more in another podcast. But, you know, it's going to be something where you can go through and edit your book yourself. You can edit it on your computer. You can edit it on your e-reader. You can edit it in print format when you get to that point and everything. But you're always going to find something that needs to be fixed. But are you rewriting whole sections?
Right.
Or are you actually just looking to do a proofread or whatever. And it's hard to judge your own work.
That's been my problem with Aristid, is I have completely rewritten it. And I mm-hmm. have completely written it 4 times now.
Mm-hmm.
And I am going back and completely rewriting it. But the thing is,
it's richer every time, though.
It is. And psychic distance is something that you need to be aware of. If you're working on a book and you're pouring your heart and soul into it for months, take some time off before you decide to go back and edit, because if you finish writing and suddenly you go back into editing mode, you're going to miss
a lot.
You're going to miss
a lot.
Take the time to understand the writing, what you're doing, where you're wanting to go with it.
Which leads us to the next item on our lovely little list here.
Oh, develop a team of beta readers.
Ooh.
I've always had writing groups.
Mm-hmm.
That I've kind of relied
critique
on.
Groups, uh-huh.
Critique groups. And it's good. Sometimes it took forever to get a novel done when you're only doing a couple chapters a week. Which, understandable.
When you're starting out.
You're starting out, yeah. It was kind of nice because I was teething on that first book.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot about the business of writing and what I needed to change.
Mm-hmm. Same
and
here.
With Aristid, even, I've done that. I've had different people read it at sections at a time and started realizing that book has so much going on, you can't digest a chapter a month. Mm-hmm. It has to be almost read.
Well, because one of the things that your beta readers need to look out for, and it's like, you know, when we talk about beta readers, we're not talking so much about your friends and family and stuff like that, just reading the book to see if they find it enjoyable or whatever. We're talking about getting a group of people who have various strengths. You want to identify with those beta readers, what exactly do you want back from them? You want people who are willing to give you honest feedback,
right.
Not just blow sunshine up dark places.
And I think one of my strengths, and sometimes people didn't like this, is I always tend to look at plot very strongly.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I would rewrite people's work.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's
when we were in the critique group.
Oh, yeah. And even later, people would give me little snippet to read, and I'd read it, and I think, hey, this is great, but what if we did this? What if we went really, really dark with this? And they're like, no, stop. No, this isn't what I want.
Well, but see, that's kind of basically what you want from your beta readers, because you then ultimately control the gate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are you going to pay attention to? What are you going to ignore and say, that's not really the direction I wanted to go with this book? But sometimes those ideas that you maybe didn't have for your book can trigger either a subplot that you can add to the book, or trigger maybe an idea for another book.
or even sometimes reinventing an entire character.
Yeah, exactly. You know, adding something to the book to make it richer, to make it deeper. You know, but if you're at a point where you're just ready to go and stuff like that, you just identify to your beta readers, you know, look, I need to make sure that, you know, if you find a misspelling, you find a transposition, you find an area that makes you stop or, you know, is unclear, or you find inconsistencies, mm-hmm. that's a really big thing, especially like in your case when you've been writing and rewriting the same book.
There's going to be
Are there going to be inconsistencies in the storyline, inconsistencies in the character? Is the character going to say, you know, that we're going over here to the butcher in one moment, and then in the very next page turn, you've got him over at the baker instead.
Or the simple fact that I started this off with main characters that were married with three children, and now they have one child.
I actually had that happen once.
I don't want
the I didn't ghosts, publish it, though.
The ghosts of those other children coming up.
Well, so let's say you've written your book, you've edited it to death. Let's say you've even maybe paid someone to do some editing for you, which we'll get into in a later podcast. You've got a group of, you know, maybe three or four people around you who you trust their judgment. You know that they all give you good feedback about the story and everything. You're really getting close then to being ready to publish. So one of the things that you really want to do coming up to that point is to get a website, a blog, decide what social media accounts you're going to be able to do.
Some sort of presence on the world wide web.
An online presence. You want to start kind of building your brand, so to speak. Preparing for the release of your book. Boy, preparing interest in maybe your book.
Going back, the brand building.
Oh, yeah.
That's, oh boy. Yeah. I dropped the ball on that one.
Well, I think we all did because we were all learning at the time.
Yeah, because I try to sit there and think, what is my brand? Because I write many different.
See, and that's part of my problem, too, is the fact that I like to read so many different genres, that I write in so many different genres, and I don't focus on one specific or two specific genres. Right now, I've got, you know, thriller and mystery. That's okay, but it was still a bit of a shock to some of my readers that went from my dark thriller series to a kind of a humorous, lighthearted mystery series with a snarky, you know, seductress chick in it. So yeah, the branding aspect is going to be really important. And one of the things I want to caution on your social media presence, don't get so many sites set up, especially when you're first getting into this. Don't set up so many sites and never interact with people on those sites. You know, if you can handle Twitter, set up a Twitter account. If you can handle Facebook, set up a Facebook account. If you can handle posting on a blog or your website every so often, you know, on a schedule, make sure you're doing that. But if you're not able to handle posting on Pinterest and whatever else the heck is out there, you know, focus on, you know, maybe two or three different things, and then you can add later on to your online presence.
Which Facebook right now,
is struggling, having some issues.
It's having some issues. They're struggling. You know, I've ran analytics before on my Facebook thing. I was reaching 30 people. And yeah, I'm not going to pay for huge amounts. I've heard people paying huge amounts and not getting
anything out of it. Yeah, yeah.
And I what I see now is when I'm scoping my Facebook feed, I have, did you like Jim Butcher's or Clive Barker's or so-and-so's book? Read my book because I wrote this character. It's like,
that actually makes me stay away from people whenever they try to compare themselves to big names.
Bypass it. I think Facebook for businesses is dead. And I know that they're having a lot of issues among with everything else that's popped up in the news.
We're going to get a lot of hate mail about that comment, but it's going downhill lately. Yeah, there we go.
Twitter sometimes works, but then the thing is,
it's over. Everybody's pushing so much more. It's not what it used to be.
There was one point I realized I'm talking only to writers. I have no fans, and that was horribly depressing. Although I love talking to writers, don't get me wrong. Some of the best conversations I've ever had late at nights with writers.
Well, and we actually do get quite a few listens on our podcast here through posting about it on Twitter.
That's right.
So it has been effective in, you know, drawing some attention to our names, so to speak.
And blogging is,
Oh, I loved him.
I loved
that's
him.
That's my favorite
too,
thing.
But I also wonder anymore, is that...
Yeah.
Because I've even heard people say blogging's dead. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing is, if that's dead, then what's social media 3.0? Because I think we've already done 2.0.
Oh, gosh. Are we at 6.0 at this point?
Instagram or whatever.
Snapchat. Oh, gosh.
Which I don't know how Instagram for writers works.
But. Yeah. Like I said, figure out which social media presences you want to establish. Limit it to, a couple. Mm-hmm. Two or three. What you can handle. And then you can always add to it as things change. Now, one thing I want to also address in this aspect is, your website, your blog, your social media presence. You need to also make sure that you get a newsletter set up. You don't have to establish your newsletter and start sending things out yet. It's probably not going to be something you're going to want to do, but you need to decide if you're going to use MailChimp, MailerLite, one of those things, and at least get an account set up on there so that when you... play around with it a little bit, so that when you do get ready to start addressing your mailing list, when you do get your manuscript and everything set up, you'll at least already have a mailing list set up so that when people find you, they can sign up for it, because it's an excellent way to get pre-orders on your following books. So let's say you've written the best book, you've edited it, you've got a good beta reader team, you've gotten great feedback, you've established your online presence and everything. So now you're ready to get down and dirty and get everything ready to go with publishing. You're moving closer and closer to hitting publish.
And this is where you have to make the decision of whether you're going to do an indie or whether you're going to try to see if you can sell in traditional publishing.
Yeah, we're just going to talk about the indie point of view, because traditional publishing... It's still so up in the air right now. If you don't already have a name established, it's almost impossible to break in right now, just with everything the way it is. But one of the most important things that you can do is get you a professional-looking, genre-appropriate cover for your book. Don't worry about the print version or anything like that right now. Focus specifically on getting a nice, strong cover for your book in ebook format. That's easier, that's cheaper to do up front if you're going to pay somebody. You want to make sure you focus on several things when you're looking to establish a cover. You want to make sure that it has strong, legible fonts that are actually still readable in a thumbnail size. When the picture is just a small, what's called thumbnail size, on the websites that you set up for the sale of your book, you need to be able to read, at least the title of the book from just a quick glance. That's one of the things that a lot of people really struggle with and don't get right on their covers, is what their font size, their font legibility,
and
you know, particularly in that thumbnail
that
size.
Mine, due to the thumbnail, is you can't really see
anything. It's like a smudge.
Yeah.
It's a smudge. And that gets me to another thing. You want to avoid too much flat black.
Hey, I'm a horror writer.
Yeah, but you still want to avoid too much of the flat black.
Oh, use glossy.
If you're gonna use black, you want to make sure there's varying shades and degrees of it, kind of a smokier look maybe, or less. If you're gonna have some flat black in there, less of it, because that just it doesn't look real nice. You also
professional looking cover.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you also want to avoid too much busyness on the cover. It needs to be able to grab attention. It needs to be able to say, this is what my book is about, this is the genre, in just a quick glance. And if there's too much going on, too many colors, too many images, if there's not enough what's called white space, not meaning it's the color white, just some white space in there that doesn't have a lot of stuff.
It's you want to lead the eye.
Yes, you want to lead the eye. Uh-huh. Very much so. And that's one of the things that a lot of people struggle with their cover is, trying to make sure they've got enough in there and not too much in there. It's kind of a nice little balancing act.
You want it to look like a professional cover. You don't want it to end up looking like a fourth grader's PowerPoint.
Exactly.
Yes, and I've seen those before.
Yes, yes. one of the things that I've done and that I would encourage writers to do is go online, go to Amazon, go to Barnes and Noble, and look at the genre that you are choosing for your book. Look at a lot of the top 100 books that are on the lists and everything. What do the covers look like? What do the fonts look like?
Which, actually, we did that at a brick-and-mortar store the other day.
Yeah.
Walked through and started looking at some of the different covers for fantasy for kind of what I'm coming up with my story coming out soon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's another great way to do it. You took some pictures and and just kind of see what's out there, what's selling, you know. And that's another thing. You want to make sure that if you're looking online, is this something that's got a ranking of like a million something and it's not selling? Or is it something that has 100,000 or less, which means it's actually selling online?
Which I think the book I pulled out and was really interested in and kind of had that generated my ideas wasn't something that was on the front shelf. It was something that was, I think I grabbed the side, pulled it out, and went, ooh, this cover is what I like.
Striking, yeah.
And then it's like, oh, this is clear back here, you know, forgotten.
But if you went online, if you took the name of that book and went online, because I saw that one picture that you had, it was a very striking cover. Mm-hmm. Very, you could definitely tell what time period, what genre
the
you were looking at.
Led the book.
Yes, very much so. It was a very nice cover. Which then gets us back into the next item on the list.
I can't read your writing.
Oh, good gravy.
Oh, decide where you are going to sell your book.
Are you going to do Amazon? You want to do kdp.amazon.com. You going to do Barnes & Noble direct? You want to do press.barnesandnoble.com. If you want to do Apple direct, you want to go in and you'll have to download their iTunes producer and set up an account.
Which I know there's a lot of stories on the iTunes producer. They actually had a program to where you could go in and set your book, but if I remember right, you could only sell it on iTunes with that.
Correct. You also have Kobo, which is under Writing Life. Oh gosh, I didn't write that one down.
Smashwords, we didn't do Smashwords.
Well, Smashwords is an aggregator.
Okay.
When we're talking about aggregators, there are two probably the primary ones, and this is where you set up your book through the aggregator like Smashwords, or draft to digital. Those are the two really big ones. And what you're doing is you're setting up your book on that platform, and then you get to choose which of the other sales sites you're going to sell on.
Right.
If you're not going to sell direct on Kobo, you can sell through the aggregator. Like, I use Smashwords. If you're not going to sell direct on Apple, let's say, then you can set up to sell direct, or you can sell through the aggregator directly to the, you know, the big people.
Is Nook and Barnes & Noble still linked, or have they split ways?
Well, Nook is Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
Yeah. So, it's, you know, if you're selling an ebook on Barnes & Noble, it's going to be for the Nook.
Okay.
But one of the things that using an aggregator is good for, too, and this is specifically true, I know, with Smashwords, is you have access to libraries. And I've actually sold some books through libraries on Smashwords.
I've donated some books to libraries.
Hard copies.
Yeah,
hard copies. Well, this is talking more the ebooks. You can sell your ebooks through Smashwords, or I'm not sure who all Drafted Digital uses, because I've never used them before.
Yeah,
but one of the things when deciding whether you're going to use an aggregator or go direct to somebody, especially starting out, when you have to go direct with each of these sites, you have to have a separate file for your manuscript. And so you also have to track your sales. You get a lot more reporting stuff done. It's just more time that it takes for each site that you're direct with. If you go through an aggregator, the aggregator takes just a tiny little bit off the top of what each site sells your book for. And you end up only getting one reporting site that you have to deal with.
And if, like, with Kindle Unlimited, I don't think you can use Smashwords. Pretty much, Kindle Unlimited, don't they have to be the sole?
Well, for KDP, for Kindle Direct Publishing, you have to use them directly.
Okay.
Like, for me, for the longest time, I sold on Amazon through Kindle Direct Publishing, And then I had the Smashwords aggregator to sell through to Barnes & Noble, Kobo, Apple, and all of that kind of stuff. It just made it so much easier to deal with at that time. But the other places have made it a little easier to go direct to them now. So a lot of times after you get kind of built up and you get more comfortable with the industry, you can then pull off of your aggregator and then, say, go direct to Kobo or Apple or Barnes & Noble or the other direct sites. You'll end up making a little bit more off of those. And sometimes you can also take advantage of their promotions that they have. That's what I did in early 2017. I took Kobo off of going through an aggregator, and I went through Kobo Direct to try to take advantage of some of their in-house promotions.
And did it work?
And it did. It did. I actually started having a lot better sales through Kobo by taking him off the aggregator. But we can get into some other details on how some of the other sites work. But it just, when you're first starting out, probably it's a good idea to consider an aggregator for everything except for KDP, Amazon.
Shotgun it out there.
Just because it just makes your life a little easier, right, in the interim. So before you decide to sell your book and to post it online, to publish it, you want to do what's called, you know, prep your front and your back matter in your book interior. That's basically where you put in your links for your social media accounts. You put in your link for your mailing list. You put in, you know, maybe a table of contents in the front matter.
Author bio in the back.
Yeah, your author bio in the back and all of that kind of stuff. Some people like to add, as part of their front matter, they like to add some reviews that they've gotten maybe from some bigger name, maybe a big name author that has read their book and liked it, or maybe Kirkus reviews or Publishers Weekly or something. They've gotten a big name review, and so some people will add that to their front matter as well. So
thank you, Ginger Nuts of Horror. Hey, that was seriously one of my best reviews.
Really?
Yeah, I absolutely love Jim and the time he took
to read
through my book. And actually, he sent me probably one of the longest questionnaires for the interview I'd ever had. And I mean, used quite a bit of it. So
really?
Yeah, he was an awesome guy in Scotland.
Oh, Scotland.
Scotland.
Arrgh! Okay, no, that's pirates.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll need to get Tyler in there for the Scottish accent. Okay. That's my son. And the last thing you kind of want to do after you get everything ready and you're just about ready to hit publish, you want to develop what's called an ARC team. I know we've probably talked about ARCs. It's advanced reader copies of your book. You can develop these advanced readers ahead of time. These are people that could potentially leave a review on your book once you get it up on your website and or up on the different sales websites.
Before you launch, right?
Yeah, you want to make sure that you're establishing your ARC team ahead of time. One thing that you can do it's going to cost you some money if you do it, but there are advanced reader companies that can distribute your book to their interested readers.
And this isn't pay for ratings by any means.
No, this is actual legitimate companies. I've dealt with two of them. You just pay them a certain amount of money. They distribute your book, your advanced reader copy, to readers that have expressed interest in it. The readers are doing it for free. You're not paying the readers anything. You're paying the company to
essentially solicit your book.
Right. Basically to solicit your book to their list of readers. There is no guarantee that the readers will leave a review. You know, say 50 people sign up to read your book and say only 25 or 30 actually end up leaving a review.
It's not a bad That's number okay. of reviews, though.
No, it's not. And for a launch, for a book coming out and launching,
especially
that's a
if you're,
great way to get some...
If you're unknown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great way. I've used Hidden Gems and Advance Read, I always want to add an E on there, or a D on there, but I've used those two services, and with Hidden Gems, I got, 30 people, I think, that signed up to read my book, and I got about 22 reviews out of that, so that was a pretty good percentage. And then Advance Read, it's a newer company that's doing this. It's a person on Kboards who has another service that he provides, and he started this last year. And I've only got like 4 people that signed up to read my little cozy mystery series thing and stuff like that, but we'll see how many end up actually leaving reviews.
Do you remember what you paid?
Actually, I didn't pay anything because I'm one of the early people. And that's another thing, too. When you've got a company that's brand new, if they're wanting to establish themselves in an industry and stuff like that, they're going to charge either very little to get people to try them out, or they're going to charge nothing if you sign up within a certain period of time or something like that to try out their service. That's a whole nother ball of wax, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, once you get a team of people that like your book, or you decide to use a service to congregate the people, again, as long as they're not guaranteeing any reviews, they're not guaranteeing any star rating or anything like that.
And research, don't go for the first thing that you find on Google.
No. Oh, gosh, no. No.
The first 3 are paid ads anymore.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But like I said, I've used Hidden Gems and Advance Read. They're legit companies, and, you know, you're not always going to get the kind of reviews you really would like to have, but you get real reviews.
And we should say Denise has not been paid for this endorsement.
Oh, and I have not been paid for this endorsement, yes. I'm only going off of my personal experience with them. The last thing on the list that we kind of want to address here is just write that next book. When you get this book done, ready to go, write the next book. Don't be like, Brian!
Hey.
Because the most important thing is there are so many people out there with just one book published.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't develop a following.
There was a writer at a con, and I don't remember who said this, but she sat there and said, you know what the hardest thing in the world is? And people said, writing your first book. And she goes, and what's even the hardest thing after that? And they said, writing your second book.
Yes.
Yes. I'm working on it.
Yep. You're a lot farther along now than you were. So yeah. That's great, though.
Progress.
I will be so glad when you can hit publish on that puppy. But that's really the most important thing, because a lot of people won't take, they'll be looking for a new book. They might look and see, you know, how many books has this person written or whatever. A lot of people aren't going to take advantage of someone, or they're not take advantage.
Don't take advantage of
it. Yeah. A lot of readers aren't even going to take a chance on someone who only has one book published, especially if it's supposed to be in a series.
Which I cheated. I also published short stories.
And that's fine, too. Novellas, and
a novella I did previous to Hell to Pay, which was kind of the beginning story.
Mm-hmm.
That I put out there as kind of the appetizer for the book.
Mm-hmm. And I know people who, they'll write 2 or 3 books in the same series before they even publish the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's getting into a whole nother thing that we'll address in a later podcast. So.
Okay.
All right.
I think we're ready to stick a fork in this one.
Okay, just remember, write, and write some more. Don't be a one-hit wonder.
That's right.
People will wonder where you went.
Make it a habit.
Yep. Every day, if you can. Yeah, at least every week. Right.
All right. I'm William Brian Johnson.
And I am D.A. Bale.
Take care.